Randall Kennedy is with us, and we are talking about race. We are talking about the society. We've been talking in the past, but all of this stuff is also in the present.
Oh, absolutely.
Your book on... All right, I'll do it. I'll read it real fast so that I can get all the way through it. Nigger, the Strange Career of a Troublesome Word. Mm-hmm. I don't use that word any more than I really much think about these other issues that you are talking about. All of these are current subjects as well as court cases out of the 1600s and 1700s and 1800s.
Yes. The anxieties that continue to surround... anxieties continue to surround interracial intimacy. There's still a considerable opposition to interracial intimacy. There's still controversies about who's who and what's what. Before break, you mentioned this notion of whiteness as property and the idea of performance.
Something one could own? One could own whiteness?
Well, yes, but, you know, the whole notion of, you know, being in a particular category, people have changed categories. So, for instance, white women. There have been any, I talk about white women who would pass for black for purposes either of avoiding prosecution. So if you were in a jurisdiction where it was against the law for a white person or a black person to be married, one way of avoiding prosecution was to say, hey, we're not in violation of the law. Both of us are colored. And in that instance, you had white women who would say, I'm colored. Another thing that white women did sometimes was to, in a sense, to hide out from their families. They would say that they're colored. I give the example of the Shiler family. George Shiler was a black man. He married a white woman from Texas.
In the 20th century.
And when she married him, she was afraid of her, that her family would find out. So they got married in a civil ceremony in New York. And when she checked the box, you know, what are you? She said colored. And so there you have an example of a white woman passing for colored to essentially escape her family. Then you have some people who, you've had white women who've said that they were colored in order to sort of fit in black neighborhoods. They thought that they might be resented. They might be ostracized. So instead of going through all of that, they said, hey, listen, I might look white, but actually I'm colored.
Well, and the flip side of that, you talk about Jody Shiler's daughter, who is very visible in America as a young black girl, a youngster who is very gifted musically, who decides she's white. So
yes,
the passing goes both ways.
The Shiler family was an extraordinary family. George Shiler wrote a book called Black No More, which was a hilarious, many people view it as sort of the first black science fiction novel. It's a novel about what would happen if a scientist came up with some treatment to make black people white. And it's a sort of a spoof. And it's about passing in a big way. His wife, as I just indicated, passed for purposes of marrying him. And then they had this prodigy of a daughter who was just a great pianist and who decided late in her short, unhappy life to pass for white. So this is a family, each member of which grappled with interracial intimacy, grappled with passing, grappled with identity, grappled with what does race mean.
I'd like to step back. There's some underlying themes, overarching, if you will, themes in this book. You know, we've been talking about one piece of it, which is the objection to interracial intimacies in all of their manifestations. From the perspective that it's inappropriate for races to mix.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's unnatural, illegal, and all sorts of other things. There's a view that we've not talked about, which is essentially the cultural genocide perspective on not only marriage but adoption, and you mentioned it with respect particularly to African Americans and American Indians. But that's a whole other issue that in some ways makes it all more complicated. Mm-hmm. And if it were just for a two-way argument, you could sort of get your mind around it, but it's not. It's a three-body problem, and
27-body problem.
and that makes it extraordinarily complicated because you have well-intentioned, as well as otherwise, people on both sides, yes, of those.
On all sides.
On all sides.
Yes.
And then people in the middle.
One of the things that I was very keen to do in my book was to point out that while it is true that whites have been the most significant factor in discouraging interracial intimacy, it's by no means the case that whites are the only ones who have wanted to discourage interracial intimacy. So we're talking about, let's talk about marriage for just a quick moment. I talk about, black people have generally been against laws prohibiting interracial marriage because they understood those laws to be stigmatizing. They understood those laws as saying that black people are so tainted that the state needed to step in to protect white people against the contamination of black blood. So black people have been against that. At the same time, a lot of black people have been, if not skeptical, hostile to interracial intimacy. So, for instance, I talk about Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass's first wife was black. She
Frederick
died.
Frederick Douglass, the great abolitionist, who was born in slavery.
That's right. The great abolitionist, the most eloquent slave in world history, is how Orlando Patterson referred to Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass's first wife, the woman who helped him to escape slavery, she was black. She died. When she died, he married a white woman who had been an abolitionist. Well, a lot of black people were affronted by that. I quote a black newspaper editor who said, "Until now, we have had Frederick Douglass's portrait in our parlor. Now we shall deposit it in our stable." And they were angry at Frederick Douglass. They viewed Frederick Douglass as having really betrayed the race. Similarly, let's go to 1949. Walter White, the Negro executive director of the NAACP, divorced his wife, black woman, married a white woman. That caused a crisis within the NAACP, with a lot of black people thinking that Walter White had really done something quite wrong. And to this day, there are many black people who are very critical of other black people who marry outside the race. And that's one of the things that I really focus on is this feeling. In adoption, the same year that a United States court struck down Louisiana's law prohibiting interracial adoption, that same year, the National Association of Black Social Workers came out with a manifesto asserting that the adoption of a black child by white people was tantamount to cultural genocide. That was a very important manifesto. It continues to haunt adoption in the United States. It continues to chill interracial adoption in the United States. And
where we have massive numbers of children growing up without parents.
That's right. Take my state, Massachusetts. In Massachusetts, 50% of the children who are eligible for adoption are African-American children, black children. Black people do adopt. In fact, black people adopt in numbers beyond their percentage of the population. Still, if 50% of the children eligible for adoption are black, and blacks only constitute 10% of a state's population, what's going to happen if you have a strong race matching policy? If you're only willing to put black kids with black adults for purposes of adoption, what happens to all the other kids?
Well, the answer is,
unfortunately, in many places, short-term foster care bounced around from home to home to home, or institutionalized care,
which we both know are destructive.
It's totally destructive, and that's why in my book I am probably most passionate when I talk about adoption.
Well, and you say this is not black America's problem. This is America's problem, and it's a disgrace.
It is a disgrace. It is America's problem. One of the reasons why interracial intimacy is such an interesting and, I think, anxiety-producing subject is because one of the things going on is who constitutes the community. I mean, is do
in,
we look
in a time when we don't know much about that?
Well, you know, there's some people when they take a look at a black child that is without parents. How do we term that? Do we say that this is a problem for the black community? Is this a problem for the white community? Or is this a problem for the American community? I choose the latter. It's a problem for the American community. And I want children to have homes. And so I'm very much against race matching. I'm very much for placing children in loving homes as quickly as we can do that.
Randall Kennedy is the person who has this passion for children, whatever their color. We'll be back with him in just a moment. Bill Russell is here. I'm Paula Gordon. Please be with us when we return.